The Radio Memories Network is brought to you in part by Liberated Syndication, podcast publishing made easy, libsyn.com. That's libsyn.com. The Radio Memories Network welcomes you to the world of modern radio theater, an old medium revived for a new era through the Radio Memories Network. Comedy, mystery, a fireside show.
Hi, everybody. This is Steve Wilson, and you're listening to Prometheus Radio Theater's latest installment. This week, we're bringing you the conclusion of the Superhuman Times episode, Risk Management. And because of Lance's very clever and well-thought-out writing, again, I don't have to provide you a summary. We'll just let June do that. Here's the conclusion of Risk Management.
Welcome to a world where powerful champions of good protected humanity from dark forces of evil. A world where good triumphed over evil, leaving the remaining superheroes and supervillains with, well, not much to do, actually. These are the stories of extraordinary people with extraordinary abilities, leading ordinary lives among the humans they once protected or threatened, as they all find themselves in superhuman times. Join us now as Prometheus Radio Theater presents Episode 3 of the Superhuman Times story, Risk Management. Last Times. A rare volume of Romani magic spells under the protection of sorceress Natalia Zone mysteriously vanished from its museum, despite high magical security. But Natalia's daughters, Violetta and Nicoletta, successfully deduced that the spellbook did not vanish, and was in fact turned invisible by their mother to test their investigative skills. However, when Natalia tried to make the vanished book reappear for the museum's curator, Professor Keller...
No, no, no. My God, it's really gone, Natalia.
The entire museum board knows you've been against my owning that spellbook ever since I funded the expedition that found it.
What are you implying, Mackenzie? I call you out of courtesy to spare both of us any negative press, and you march into my office and...
Mr. Mackenzie, if you're going to blame anyone, blame me.
No, blame me. My mother trusted me to make the security arrangements.
Which we were supposed to work on together, Vi. I let you and Mama down.
So much for engaging our agency to guard your collection, Mr. Mackenzie. I understand completely if you...
Now, my dear Natalia, that has nothing to do with... Tell me, have you seen the museum's portrait gallery? I'm always fascinated at how gifted artists can reveal their subject's inner nature. May I show it to you?
Girls, wait here in the office without... The professor. I think Mr. Mackenzie is going to reveal his true inner nature.
I was willing to offer you a considerable sum to retain your agency last night, Natalia, but thanks to our thief, that's no longer necessary.
Why would you want incompetent boobs like us to guard your collection?
You're Natalia's own. You command respect as a powerful sorceress and a leading security expert. I know you won't rest until the book is recovered. Who wouldn't want that kind of experience, tenacity, and prestige at their disposal?
You can't afford to hire me.
And you can't afford to refuse me. Even if the book is recovered, I can still raise a few very public doubts among the art world about the museum and your dear Albert. Think of how that might affect your reputation and your agency and those lovely daughters you put in charge of everything that's gone horribly wrong. Now, what do you say?
What was that?
Was that thunder?
Shook the wall. Look at the pictures.
Good Lord, was that an earthquake?
No.
That was my answer. I need to speak with you.
About Mackenzie trying to blackmail you into working for him?
What? How the...
Violetta's got astral projection? I've got cameras.
Just as good.
For illegal surveillance, perhaps.
Read the sign on the front doors. All visitors are subject to video and audio recording on these premises. Anything our cameras see and hear in any gallery is admissible in court.
Did it catch the person who stole my book?
No, because we stole it.
What?
After you got home from your evening with Mackenzie and went to bed, I went back to the museum again. But instead of astral projection, I just walked in the door.
One of my doors.
Next stop on the Transdimensional Express, Museum Security. Watch your step, please. 9:35. Bradford's schedule is right. It should be about 10 minutes before any of the guards come back from their rounds. Check that monitor. Target acquired. One gallery with an empty display case. Still think you can do it? How do you think I used to sneak out of the house on nights Mama grounded me? Back soon. But how will we stay in contact? Whatever. Okay. Scan the monitors. Watch for guards. Odd. No guards in the Romani gallery. Well, why should there be? Nothing's really been stolen. Yet. Oh my god, she did it! She actually created a dimensional portal inside my security shield for the display case. It let her magic through, just like it let Mama's. I really have to fix that. Now if... Oh, right. Two guards headed for the portrait gallery. They're right next door to you, Nix. Hurry, hurry, reach in, feel the book, and... No, what's she... Oh, that's good. Why fumble around by hand when you can just levitate it into the portal? Just levitate a little faster before...
Why you check the cameras and the...
Crap, it's Bradford. Come on, Nix. Where'd you go? Nix! Nix! Hey! Out! Now! Jeez, you're welcome.
Brilliant.
Ballsy.
Sadistic. You almost gave the professor heart failure yesterday when he couldn't feel the book.
Oh, your daughters told me in Bradford about the caper while you and Mackenzie were in the portrait gallery.
And where is the book now?
And your sister.
Right here, Mama. What took you so long?
I hid the book in the same dimension I hid Mr. Jacoby, so I checked up on him, you know, and made sure he was happy. I mean, comfortable. Anyway, the book's right here. See?
No.
Oh, yeah. Sorry. Mama!
Finally...
Let's get it back in the display case.
I'd like to inspect it first, if you don't mind.
Professor?
It's his book.
Hope you're up on your ancient Romani, Mr. Mackenzie.
You've read this?
Yeah, I looked through it briefly.
How could you read an invisible book?
Because my mother's a sorceress, I pop between dimensions, and my sister can look into souls. Duh. Anyway, Mama, you know what that entire spell book's for? Duplicating.
Huh?
Every spell in there is devoted to letting the user create replicas of different things. Plants, tools,
works of art.
Violetta?
It fits now. When I first met you, Mr. Mackenzie, I mentioned the time you loaned a museum a painting that was stolen while it was on exhibit. I found out later you received a hefty insurance settlement for that loss, but I imagine you were pretty gun-shy about loaning out anything else from your collection.
Then why would I allow the museum to exhibit this book?
It keeps your name in the papers, keeps getting you invited to the right parties.
The duplication spell makes me wonder. What if someone has the ability to clone rare works of art? They could loan the clones to the museums, pass them off as originals, and collect hefty fees for doing so.
While keeping the genuine items safely tucked away without ever displaying them. Isn't that fraud?
If it was loaned out and promoted as being a one-of-a-kind piece, it would be misrepresentation, at least.
This is
that
pure...
That explains why you were only interested in hanging on to just that one spellbook.
And why you wanted to leverage me into protecting your collection. You wanted a backup in case you were unable to conjure your own spells, so you hoped to coerce me into conjuring them for you.
Ridiculous.
Want to see the instant replay in my office?
I don't think that will be necessary, Mr. Bradford. Even if Mr. Mackenzie succeeds in his spell-casting efforts, I doubt he'll get his copies past any museums once we alert them.
Touché, Ms. Zone.
Of course, you could enhance your reputation and let the museum keep the spellbook.
What?
And the money you paid for it.
What?
As a charitable, tax-deductible, and well-publicized donation.
On behalf of the museum, I accept your gift, Mackenzie. The spellbook, please.
Nice trick, Miss Zone, making Mackenzie disappear.
Professor, if you'll hand me the book, I'll put it back in the display case.
Maybe I better hold it. You two might try and boost it again.
Watch it, bub, or your next step will be into a dimension ruled by apes.
And I'll be on my way back to the office, Albert.
Before you go, I know you're terribly busy, Natalia, but I was wondering if... I figured since you took time out from your busy schedule the other night to join me for dinner, maybe you would join me at the exhibit's opening reception in 2 weeks?
Certainly.
You will?
Of course. You'll want us here to watch over the artifacts, won't you?
Well, yes, but I was hoping you might join me as my date.
Oh, I don't know, Albert. I've never been in a position where a client...
I understand. It makes you uncomfortable. That's okay. After our dinner, I just thought, what the hell? Take a risk.
Mama!
Oh, the girls need me. Excuse me.
Certainly.
Thank you, girls. I was just about to get
some.
Excuse me?
Did the professor ask you to the reception?
When you were with Mackenzie, he asked if that was okay with us. He's so cute.
We were discussing, risk management.
Yeah, right.
Is that why you stole the book, Mama? And why you never wanted us to find it?
Never wanted? How can you say that?
If we failed, you would have had the perfect excuse to stay hidden behind your desk for another 20 years. Maybe because Papa's disappearance isn't enough of a reason anymore?
That will be enough.
Yeah, we think so, too.
You've spent your life keeping people from getting hurt. We just never realized until now that you're one of those people.
Just because Papa vanished all those years ago, is that any reason to make the professor disappear? Just think about it before you turn him down, Mama.
Think of it as risk management. One of the many specialties we offer at Zone Defense Security. Love you.
Love you, Mama.
Natalia, is everything all right?
I'm sorry, Albert. I was just thinking about whether we should have dinner before or after the reception.
Prometheus Radio Theater has presented Episode 3 of the Superhuman Times story, Risk Management. Written by Lance Woods and starring Renee Wilson as Natalia Zone, Stephen H. Wilson as Professor Keller, Paige Strelan-Center as Violetta Zone, Heather Mickelson as Nicoletta Zone, Eli Center as Security Chief Bradford, and Scott D. Farquhar as Everett Mackenzie. Superhuman Times is created by Lance Woods. Risk Management was directed by Stephen H. Wilson and produced by Cindy Woods. This is June Swords for Prometheus Radio Theater.
And that's the way it is. Hope you liked that episode. We had a lot of fun doing it. I think I've mentioned before, we got together in the studio one night and we knocked that thing out in about 90 minutes with a lot of bloopers yet, which I may play some of those for you in the weeks to come, because we had some really funny moments doing that one. And Lance will be back with more Superhuman Times. He promises we have not seen the last or heard the last of Natalia and the Zone sisters, but they may not be back in the very next episode. I don't remember offhand what he's got on tap for that, but judging by his first two episodes, it should be a really fun listen and a really fun show to put together. Well, since we've got some time, I brought you last week a comment off of the Podio Books blog for Taken Liberty. I thought I'd bring you another. I've got another couple of really good meaty comments out there. So here's an opinion from another listener who says, the narration and character voices are second to none. You are to be complimented on both the sound quality and the caliber of the performance. Well, thank you. The story is well written and well told. I will not deny that, though the space opera element is a little too thick for my tastes. I'm not overly bothered by the sex, though there is a lot of that, but the crew itself and the laws that govern them are antithetical to any military setting that I have ever been exposed to in research or interviews. Lord knows there are plenty of real-world situations where the rules are against the men in uniform, but so much of your story is driven by layered and spiteful internal conflict within the ranks that it's a little hard for me to think of these people as any form of military cadre. As for the sex, like I said, there is a lot of it, so much so that I am sometimes torn if it is there for effect, there to make a point, or there to help set the tone of the story. Don't get me wrong, I'm a Law and Order SVU junkie, so the sex doesn't bother me, but I do feel that it has somewhat become its own separate story, distracting from the main tale. Now, before you think I'm doing a war dance around a burning copy of your book, let me conclude on a high note. There is no doubt or denial of the fact that this is a thoroughly engaging tale with believable people and a compelling story. You are to be commended for taking the traditional elements of science fiction and keeping them alive in their truest form. Also, while the technology of your story is fascinating, you aptly avoid the pitfall of letting it be the story, preferring to let it support a well-written script. Good luck in your future endeavors. There is quality to your work, something many people cannot honestly claim, in my opinion. I look forward to seeing more works from you. There we have a really good balance of some positives and some not so positives. As I said, this is the kind of comment I just love to get because I really do want to know how people are reacting. And while I love to hear just, you're great, I enjoyed it, thank you, which, believe me, means a lot to a creative person, because sometimes that's the only fuel that keeps us going, is hearing from that one person saying, your work means a lot to me. Let's be honest, that's why we're in this. We want people to recognize that us. That's why we're standing up and trying to be noticed. But I'm not just reading this to say, hey, this person thinks I'm great. Look at me. I think there were some very good comments in here, particularly about the military, the way I portray the military in Taken Liberty and in the Arbiter Chronicles in general. When I got my first review back on Taken Liberty from Library Journal, the book was recommended to readers of David Weber and David Drake, who are both very popular military SF writers. And I thought that was interesting because I never thought of Arbiters as military SF, which, okay, Steve, you know, duh, hello. It's a story of a bunch of officers in the Navy, so yeah, okay, it's military SF. But I never thought of it that way. It's like I would never say, if someone came to me and said, hey, I love W.E.B. Griffin, what TV shows should I be watching? I would never recommend MASH. To me, that's my take on the military. I grew up watching MASH. I didn't think of that as a military show. I don't think of Arbiters as a military type of fiction, even though my characters are all right there in the Navy. So I think that means that unlike very popular authors like Drake and Weber and Elizabeth Moon, I don't go in for the trappings of military life. And while I do very carefully research my stories, and I hope that shows, that's a piece of them I really don't put a lot of research into, other than duplicating the rank structure from the British Navy, and that's what you see in the Arbiters universe, a fairly simplified system of naval ranks. Other than that, I don't put a lot of careful research into a military setting, probably because I grew up in a military family. My dad is a retired Air Force colonel, so I feel like I've kind of lived part of that lifestyle. I've never been in the military myself, but as I said, military family, my dad, both my uncles, two of my nephews are in the Navy now. So I feel like I've got some inside information there. Growing up as the son of a military man in the Vietnam era kind of leaves you a little cynical, a little jaded about the military command structure. So I guess I do kind of satirize the military more than I accurately portray them. I will confess to that. I guess I distrust authority. So that definitely comes through in my work. Anyway, really good comment. Already discussed last week the sexual antics of the Arbiters and why they're there. I think this reader has a very insightful comment. It's there to set a tone. Yeah, it is there to set a tone. That's the society they live in. You're going to see a lot of that. And so part of it is backdrop. And another part of it, as we said last week, is just my way of hopefully relating my characters to the audience by showing a side of them that a lot of us can relate to. Anyway, another example of a great comment, very well thought out, and I'd love to hear more of this kind of thing. I'd love to hear more of what you guys are thinking, and like I said, just telling us we're doing a good job, that's fuel, please. We love to hear that, too. Well, that about wraps up the show for this week. Next week, probably going to bring you an interview with Susie Plaxen, which I conducted at Farpoint. Susie, if you don't remember, played Worf's Klingon lover, Kalar. I think she was half Klingon, and the mother of his son, Alexander. She also played a Vulcan and an Andorian, and she did Next Gen and Enterprise. I think she did, yeah, she did Deep Space Nine, did a female Q. She has quite a lot of science fiction background, and she was recently in the movie Red Eye, which was a pretty good suspense film. She just has a really interesting, varied background. We had a very nice conversation I'm going to bring to you. Be aware, because of my agreement with Susie, when we did that interview, it's only going to be posted for a week. So if you want to hear that next Friday and 7 days onward, grab it, because I have to take it out of the archives. One last thing before I let you go. Balticon is coming up. Balticon number 41. Balticon is Maryland's oldest science fiction convention, put on by a great group of people. I'll be participating again this year in the podcasting track, which is put together by Paul Fisher and Martha Holloway, who do a wonderful job. We've got, oh, geez, there's a couple dozen podcasters coming, including a lot of the Podio Books crowd. So I'm really excited. I'll get you a list of names, more names next week, because I don't want to leave anybody out. If you're interested in podcasting, science fiction in general, if it's worth a trip to the Baltimore area for you, Balticon is not a con that is to be missed. I think you'll have a great time. Come on out to Marriott's Hunt Valley Inn, Memorial Day weekend. And for more information on the con, you can go to www.balticon.org. All right, I think that's quite enough for this week. We'll be back next week with Susie Plaxen, and then coming up after that, we've got a new Arbiters episode for you. Till next time, happy listening. This is Steve Wilson from Prometheus Radio Theater.